quick announcement for two of Greendale's finest. Payday is postponed until next week, so this is my freestyle rap apology.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Well, I'm a peanut bar, and I'm here to say your checks will arrive on another day. Another day, another dime, another rhyme, another dollar. Another stuffed shirt with another white collar. Criminals, Wall Street, taking the pie, and all the black man gets is a plate of white lies. Prisons recruiting them, police be shooting them. Rap artists looting them, labels all diluting them. Barack Obama is scared of me, because I don't swallow knowledge, and I spit it for free. Let me clear my throat. Ha, ha, ha. I don't know what that was. I don't know what that was.
Another thing, you guys, another person you guys have covered a lot on the show that we've never touched on here, and I'm interested in why you guys are so enamored with this character, is H.P. Lovecraft. We've done a few shout-outs, mentions, and programs about this character. So tell me a little bit about your fascination with Lovecraft and where that comes from.
Hold on. Before we do this, you realize this could just take up the whole show here, and just with Lobo alone. So are you sure you want to go down this road?
Yeah, sure. I don't see why not.
Well, all right.
I don't sound concerned, but just tell me about it. Lobo, you live kind of near the stomping grounds, right?
I'm roughly 2 hours drive to the man's last place of living, his last place on this wretched earth that he lived, where his body still is in Providence, Rhode Island. So, I mean, he's the grandfather of all horror, the modern horror. I mean, before Lovecraft, you had Machen, and you had Dunsany,
Poe,
and you had Poe. Now, Poe, Lovecraft is like the direct successor as far as the ambient horror to Poe. Poe, I mean, the Telltale Heart could have been a Lovecraft story. The Witch House could have been a Poe story. He is the father of all horror. When you have people like Wes Craven and John Carpenter and Stephen King and Del Toro, you know, speaking the praises of a guy who died 77 years ago and he's still pertinent today, that's pretty special. You know, the guy, his stories don't really translate that well into movies because his stories are pure atmosphere. You know, it's
very cerebral.
Yeah, he's if you come into Lovecraft at a later age, if you don't start reading it when you're like in your early teens, it's not a real easy kind of reading. You know, it's not a stripped down style. It's not a particularly beautiful style. He had a Baroque way of writing things, but you know he wrote it to his taste. It was what he wanted. He was one of his most staunch advocates against his writing. He thought he was bad. He thought he was a horrible writer. You think about all the stories that he put in the bin that never even made it to paper to be able to be saved. I mean, he created creepy sci-fi slash horror. He's the guy. There wasn't anybody before him, and there really hasn't been anybody of his, you know, ilk sense.
When you see movies like The Thing,
that's Lovecraft.
When you see Alien, when you see Prometheus, when you see a lot of Wes Craven films, these are all direct pull-offs of H.P. Lovecraft. Lovecraft was the first person to put, like, the unspeakable horror out there, where he would give you just enough description to where you had to build the creature or whatever was going on inside your head. He was one of the first people to use, like, the tentacled monster, you know, or the thing in the dark out in the distance coming to get you. He was also very sci-fi. He was one of the first people to write about alien creatures coming from different planets. Most of the big gods and things like that, the big creatures that don't really care about humanity that are driving everybody crazy, they all come from the stars.
We're inconsequential. Human beings are inconsequential. That's the best part.
We were human beings are inconsequential in his writings, and all of these things have all come from different planets and different worlds.
Yep.
Now we take this kind of writing for granted. But when you go back and you read this stuff, you go, oh, wow, this is where this all came from. When you go back and you really read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stories and you look at them for what they are and you realize how old they are, you know, you kind of go, oh, wow, this is where all this came from. It's kind of like rock and roll. You go back and you listen to old blues and a lot of old music and you go, whoa, this is where rock and roll came from. But at the time, Lovecraft wasn't really recognized for being anything because he was so far ahead and so kooky for what he was doing for his time. The best people could say was, this is garbage. You know, this is...
He had a following.
Underground.
But not like it is here. I mean, he wrote in pulp magazines. He wrote for Weird Tales. He wrote for Strange Brew. He wrote for a few different pulp magazines. And, you know, they were... I mean, they're sought after by collectors now. You know, the Weird Tales magazines that have original runs of, you know, The Call of Cthulhu and The Shadow Over Innsmouth and, you know... The Lurking Fear, that those stories were, you didn't have, before you had Lovecraft, like Roe was saying, you know, the gods that were spoken of, the monsters that were spoken of, they were borrowed from Greek mythology or they were borrowed from, you know, the pantheon of gods. I mean, when Dunsany was writing his stories, he took a lot of his information from the King James Version and nothing else. So, you know, the stuff that he was, you know, at the end of the day, God was looking out for you. You were going, the good guy was going to win. And when Lovecraft,
no one's looking out for you. You go where you go, and you're done.
You know, and
Lovecraft created his own mythos. He created his own gods. He was one of those first people to create a world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just all of his stories, they all were linked. And he was one of the very first people to do that.
Yep.
You know, and that was what made him so different and so incredible. But again, he was so flipped out. People are like, this is garbage, you know, blah, 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 blah. And now when you go back and you look at it, you're like, wow, this is where all this stuff came from. And that's why he's so important to us, because we're able, again, it goes back to weird history. We're able to look at that and go, wow, this is where this came from. This needs to be appreciated. This needs to be respected. So, you know, I'm into all kinds of different authors like that too, but that's one of the things that we do. We look at, we say, wow, this stuff is important. This is strange. And Lovecraft is also, I think he had a lot to do with steampunk, or he's become a lot to do with steampunk.
I went to that wedding over in the Mark Twain Museum over in Hartford, over here in Connecticut, they had a steampunk exhibit that was traveling around the country. And there was a section in the steampunk exhibit of Lovecraftian inspired steampunk. You know, there's a story called the Whisper in the Darkness, and it's these aliens that come to Earth and they're looking to transmute human beings to be able to move them forward in evolution, and to be able to do it, they actually remove their brains and put them into a cylinder, and then the cylinders can talk, and that's the way the human being can talk, and then they can bring them light years to different planets so that they can experience what other life forms are like. And
when was that story written?
Oh, in the late teens, early 20s.
Exactly.
So I mean,
it's like Futurama,
have,
where they have the heads in the little tins.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where that was stolen from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say stolen. I mean, it could be it's a tribute. Let's not.
Yeah, everything's stolen.
Yeah, we rip you off all the time.
Well, no one's debating that, Rogan. Now, do people? I'm just busting you. Was Lovecraft? He's kind of intertwined with the esoteric in a lot of ways. Is that something that kind of came along afterwards, or was he mixed up in you know, esoteric circles that he was writing this stuff?
No,
not at all. No,
he wasn't.
That was an
or
question. Which one do you mean?
Well,
he was a xenophobe.
No, he was not.
Okay.
He was not involved in esoteric in any form. Well, you got to realize that, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, what you're pointing to is the whole Necronomicon thing, where there's people that believe that this book is real, and that's how you call up the elder gods and demons and stuff. Well, the Necronomicon doesn't really exist. I mean, granted, there is a hard copy of it that someone decided that they were going to publish, but it's not Lovecraft's Necronomicon. The book, it was just a reference point within the mythos to have like a depository of strange information. Like you could go to one particular book and this is where all the spells and incantations were kept, and it was written by the mad Arab Abdul al-Hazred. And it was actually he came up with the name Abdul al-Hazred. It was an anagram for one of the people in the Arabian Nights, the story of the Arabian Nights. And other authors actually looked at this, like Robert Bloch and August Derleth and a bunch of other writers that were not necessarily his contemporaries, but like pupils of his writing. And there were other people that were his contemporaries that used the book too, because it was an easy place. It was, you can just say the Necronomicon, and people that were in that circle knew what it was.
Yeah.
So he wasn't involved in the esoteric at all. I mean, there are people that believe he was, and what he was actually, there's actually a world that he's talking about, and then Cthulhu really exists, and the Elder Gods really exist, and
Yog-Sothoth.
Yeah, and Pluto is really dark Yoggoth on the rim. You know, they believe that. They can believe you can summon a Shoggoth from the bottom of the ocean. But, I mean, none of that, it's not real. But, I mean, people want to believe it's real. You know, there's people that believe Star Wars is real in an alternate universe.
It can be argued in esoteric circles that since people believe it's real and they've created books called the Necronomicon, that it is real. It has become real through belief in it being real.
I could start writing a book about, you could tulpify it. I suppose there's that possibility, but I mean, it's like saying, okay, I'm going to write about how the Twinkies all came to life. And if enough people believe it, does that make it real? It's still absurd.
No, but it's the idea that if you believe it, that something has power enough, that in a sense it does get its own form of thought, because it becomes powerful within itself.
Right. Like
if the Twinkie jumps up and runs across the table, then it is real.
I'm still going to eat it.
Which is what got
you
in trouble.
Here's what you should do, Lobo. Maybe Rojan should do this, since Lobo doesn't believe in the tulpification. Rojan, you just concentrate. Maybe the both of you can do it then, okay? Maybe you can do a mass experiment. Just concentrate on the, not now, because we're live, but concentrate on the Necronomicon. Try and tulpify it, and then open it up and get the information out. It'd be weird.
Why the hell would I want to
do that?
Like
a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, right? Sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, why would I want to do something like that?
The reason why people believe it's so much, I mean, you're familiar with the Evil Dead series, correct?
Vaguely. I'm not a big horror fan.
The Necronomicon's even spoken of in that, and that's a Raimi film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people believe that the Necronomicon's real because, it's in a movie, so it's got to be real. Is it a real book? Are there real books that are written and bound in human skin? Yeah, we covered it in the last show. There are books that are bound and written in human skin. There are books that have been written with human blood. It happens, but does that make it special and magical? Like, to some people, perhaps.
The books that are actually bound in real human skin is another thing that really fascinates me. That's another creepy, weird thing that actually did happen.
Right. It wasn't seen as creepy at the time, though, right? It was kind of like, that's how we do it.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was.
It was still creepy.
It was. Okay. I thought that was kind of like, they ran out of stuff, so they just used skin. They were like, we'll just use skin. All right. Tell me about these books that are wrapped in human skin, then.
Well, there was one guy that was being put to death. I can't remember. I'm not sure if we covered him in our last show or not, but he actually requested that when he died, that his skin be used to bound a book that told about his deeds that he did.
Yeah, that was the highwayman that shot that guy.
Yes, that's correct. So a lot of times when people would do bad deeds or whatever, I think it also happened in the church as well. I can't be 100% accurate on that. But a lot of times when people would do bad deeds or whatever, their skin would be used to bind books as leather. They would be bound in such a certain way. There's a book
that was made from Burke's skin to cover that, and he was Burke and Hare were the two guys that were killing people in England and giving their bodies to a dissection place so that they'd have a constant. They started off by digging up bodies, and then they realized it was just easier to kill people. So they started killing people, and they made a good, good deal of money on it.
Well, wait a minute now. So I'm confused. So bad people, they would take their skin and make them into books. Is that supposed to be like a chastisement from the whoever the church or whatever? That seems kind of off the wall.
Well,
why would you want to preserve these people? Why would you want to glorify them by making them a part of a book? Unless they wrap the Bible in them to try and
It's one of those things that's like this is what you pay for doing these bad deeds. But there were also books written on anatomy that were bound in human skin.
Yeah, they were cadavers that were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the Brown University has 3 books that are bound in human human skin.
Yep.
They're out there, and you can probably I think there's some that are actually on eBay. You can go buy them.
I don't know if they're allowed to sell anything that's considered human remains anymore.
You might, I think, well, that's the laws in America, though. They might be different outside of America.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Because you can still buy cadaver bones and things like that.
Well, you can buy bones. Well, they have to be cleared. Mm-hmm. They have to be cleared first.
I bought a dead homeless guy like 2 weeks ago. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Well, you're lucky. Did you go pick him up at the flagon?
You got to know the right people to ask. That's all I'm saying.
You did. You picked him outside of the cask and flagon, didn't you?
No, you know I don't drink. tell me, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm holding on tight here, folks. We're close to we're riding the wave of stomach ailments here tonight.
Oh no.
No. We're going to be all right.
If you
want
to take it back a little bit to H.P. Lovecraft, the book The Hound, mm-hmm. they talk in that book about a couple of grave robbers mm-hmm. who actually have a locked portfolio bound in tan human skin
yep.
that held certain unknown, unnameable drawings. You know, if you want to take it back to that, we can tie it all back into that again. So, yeah, these books are out.
No, that's all right. I wanted to ask you about you can connect it to this, because the part about the book thing reminds me of a show you guys did, Death and the Immortally Challenged, which is about all these different death rituals around the world. I know I'm sort of springing this on you, Is that too far in the ether now for you to remember?
No. Oh, yeah.
I
think you remember.
Spoken like a true producer, Rogan. I like that. So tell me, what are these death rituals? Because I don't know anything about this stuff. See, this is what I like about Project Archivist, folks. They cover stuff that we don't even get a chance to yet on BOA Audio. And if you ever wonder why we don't do a serial killer episode, it's because these guys have done such a good job on serial killers that it's like... It would be like me trying to play a song from their album. It doesn't make any sense. So tell me about these death rituals. It's true, man. It's true.
Well, which one do you want to hear
about? What
about
the death ritual?
You want to? Well, we could talk about the Tibetan one, the Tibetan Buddhist celestial barrels.
Yeah,
do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Just pick your favorite death ritual and tell the folks at home about it so they can find out what kind of stuff they learn about on PA.
Well, what Tibetans, Buddhists sometimes have a practice. What they'll do is they'll take the body, they'll have a funeral service for it, if you will, and then they'll do what's called a sky burial. And what they'll do is they'll chop up the body into pieces, they'll wrap it up, and then they'll take it up into the mountains and leave it there for vultures to feast on. And what it is it's their idea, the soul has now left the body, so the body is inconsequential of their use. So they put it out and they let the birds come and feast on it, and that's one of the ways when the bodies go back into the realm of the wild or the realm of the world, if you will. I think it was it still happens today. I think mm-hmm. 75% or 90% of Tibetan Buddhists still choose sky burial.
Yeah, they would.
It's been observed for thousands of years. You know, it's mm-hmm. one of those things that it's just something that they do. There's all kinds of different ones. There's the Viking funerals where they would put bodies on boats, send the boats out, and they would shoot arrows out and let the boats on fire, and then the bodies would burn on the boat as it was going off into Valhalla.
Oh, yeah, that's a famous one.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of them. There's the they still do it on the River Ganges. They take there's a funeral pyre. They put the body on the funeral pyre. They light it up, and then you know they eventually kick it into the water for the River Ganges to take it away, and by doing so over the last hundreds of years they've been doing it, there's actually a catfish that lives in the water called a goonch. It's a predatory catfish, and these things grow to 6 feet long and over 200 pounds because they've been feeding on human bodies for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
But there's ritualistic cannibalism. A family member will die, and the family will eat parts of the body. That's done in... That was carried on for the longest time in Papua New Guinea. There were certain tribes in South America that also.
Oh yeah, the finger amputation people. That's right. Yeah, there's a tribe in New Guinea. Every time they would have a death of a loved one of a woman in the family,
there would be people within the family that would cut off one of their fingers for every time a woman in the family died or children in the family died. And it was a way of expressing pain. Yeah, it was a way of expressing pain for a family member dying off, and it was also a way of warding off the spirits. But basically what they would just do is they would just take an axe and they would just cut off a finger with an axe. And then they were tied with a string, and they would take the finger, they would tie a string around it really, really tight, cut off the blood circulation, do it, and then they would just cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do that anymore. They've banned it. They don't have that practice. Well, they openly don't do the practice in New Guinea, but I'm sure, you know, it's still
Christianity
happens.
Came through. That's why.
Yeah, can't do that anymore.
Yeah, because they realized
that was
they
how they
fingers?
Would express sorrow.
Well, there's that.
Jeez.
You know,
but, yeah. They're like, you know how we've been cutting off fingers? I don't think that's a good idea, because that guy over there who hasn't lost any wife and kids, he's doing great. That guy with all 10 fingers. Maybe we need
they
to
call
reconsider
him 10.
This.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah,
there's a whole.
Exactly.
The death rituals are just they're many and they're varied. They run the gambit of there's death rituals for in Mexico, the Day of the Dead, Santa de Muerte,
mm-hmm.
Muerte de Diez, which is the day that I think I'm pronouncing that right. Santa de Muerte was the death cult.
That's the god. That's the saint of death.
Yes, we just covered her last show. The other one is...
I'm going to go back. I think we're going to go back and touch on her again.
Yeah, we have.
Here.
We have to. But there's
who'd you
there's
have on to talk about that?
Dead.
We just covered it ourselves.
Yeah, we covered it.
Oh.
We
it's a good book.
Information.
I had a guest on about it. And he had a good book. And then there's another good book that just came out. I haven't got a chance to look at it yet, though. I forget the name of the guy.
Shoot us the name.
Yeah, I'll send it to you guys. What's that?
Shoot us the name when you get around to it.
Yeah, I will.
We'd like to
I
have
will,
it. Yeah, but there's a reverence for the dead that is it's amazing because we're the only. I don't want to say we're the only animals on the planet that mourn their dead, because there's been documented evidence of elephants and that shows a certain level of sentience beyond what we'd expect it to have when mourning for a dead loved one, but we have elaborate ways of showing it, going back to the days before the pharaohs of what we do, how we revere the dead. You know, you think about even here in the United States, we had the days of mourning where, all the mirrors in the house were covered and a person was laid in the mourning room of the house and they were laid at rest for 3 days for time to pass and to make sure that one, the person's actually dead. And two, that, it was a place for the family to come, because people had to come from long distances to be able to see their loved ones. So, I mean, there's always been a certain form of ritual involved with death.
And then you've got the ones,
why do you think that
like the
is?
Criminal ones.
Let's get speculative. Where do you think that comes from?
It's the belief of our, it's the disbelief of our own mortality is what it is. It's what drives us. To, it gives you a stark look at how finite your days are here. We're as a species, we're a pretty freaking morbid species. We have, we spend thousands of dollars on headstones and caskets, and we have these great big services to talk about how great these people are, even when they were bastards in life. When was the last time you went to a funeral service when someone was a complete and total prick? And somebody gets up there and touts how wonderful the person was.
Yeah.
I've only been to a handful of funerals where people, people berate the person that died. Like, this guy was a son of a bitch and he deserved to die. I mean, even people that were known, like, horribly, horrible people, there's always somebody out there that says at least one kind word, even if it's just a pastor,
Well, then you have the legend of the crossroads, where that came from, how they would do funerals for people that were convicted of hanging and stuff over in Europe at one time, and for witches as well. That's another off-the-wall one that's where. Do you know anything about that?
What's that
chance?
All about?
The legend of the
crossroads thing?
Over in Europe, they would have witch trials and things like that. But when they would hang a person, they would try to hang them at a crossroads. And the idea was that their soul would be, that they were so despicable and so despised, they wanted to make sure that their soul couldn't even carry on in the afterlife. They wanted them to be doomed to purgatory forever. So the idea was they would hang a person at a crossroads, and then they would bury the body at the crossroads right there, where that was the idea that you were buried at the crossroads. The symbolization goes between life and death. So they would take people and they would bury their bodies after they hung them at a crossroads. They would bury them in a crossroads at an intersection. They would bury them right dead or center in the middle of the intersection there. And the idea being that we don't want this person to move on after life. Sometimes they would bury them with stones as well. If they were believed to be a vampire, they'd shove a stone in their throat or down their mouth and bust their jaw before they buried them. Or they would also put churches and stuff at crossroads for the same reason.
Well, you also had the fact that you had some of the people that were hung. They would hang. I mean, you hear about people that were hung on Boot Hill and these different scaffolds and stuff. Well, there were certain people that were just revered as these horrible, horrible people. And when they hung them, they wouldn't even bury them. They would leave their bodies to swing and rot where they were, so that their body would, you know, go into dissolution and they'd never have any rest. So I mean,
where is
you had that? They're here in the States.
Oh,
here in the States, overseas, it was a common practice for people that they didn't want them to have. They didn't want them. First of all, they didn't want to bury them in consecrated ground or hollow ground.
That was another reason they would bury them at the crossroads too.
Yeah.
They didn't want their bodies in hollow or consecrated ground.
Yeah,
so
they weren't allowed in the churchyards. Yeah, they weren't allowed in churchyard. You look at some of the, like where we are, Tim, in New England. You had people that were buried on the church because they were devout Christians or whatever. They were at least, you know, putting money in the tin and when it went around, and they were at church making pretend all the time. And then you had people that just weren't church-going people. The people that were in the church and paid their whatever, they were buried on the church ground. The other people were buried in the potter's field. It wasn't sanctified. It wasn't holy. It wasn't consecrated. It was a place for, you know, the quote-unquote heathens to be buried. You know, we have that here in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and, you know, New Hampshire. It was... You weren't good enough to be buried amongst your, you know, your kin if you weren't baptized because your soul had never been saved, or you weren't, you know, you didn't confess on your deathbed to anything, or you know, there's all kinds of, you know, these rules that we put on things that we have no idea what actually happens. You know, I've never been dead, so I can't tell you.
No, it's debatable.
Well, there's that.
I've heard about all that. I've heard about all that. Yeah, well, it's part of it, too, I think, is that people don't want, even like the crappy, well, I guess it wouldn't apply to the story about the crossroads, but it's like, with all these rituals and stuff, I think there's certainly a part of, like, ego involved, too, where you're like, people, they want to be treated, that's how they would want to be treated when they die, so there should be a big thing, you know, a big to-do when you die.
Yeah, and I hope when I die,
people
will laugh
feels
and have a good
spread.
Time.
Yeah.
I don't want my death to be a sad, somber experience. I want people sitting around partying, laughing, having a good time, and trying to make a good go of it. I don't want people bummed out, you know, like, oh, I missed them in life, and blah, blah, blah. You know, sit around and laugh at the stupid stuff that I did or whatever.
Unless you're finally murdered by Lobo.
Exactly.
No comment.
Then everyone's going to be confused. Like,
how
do you still celebrate his life? What's going on with Lobo?
A bizarre garden
accident.
Yeah. Rock garden.
Yeah, rock garden accident, Jack.
His head was cruelly crushed by a spade.
Now, did you guys start out covering a lot of paranormal and then kind of move away from it, or was it always sort of something that you kept at arm's length?
That's kind of debatable.
You know,
for the paranormal in a normal way, it's covered.
Yeah, we never wanted to do that. We never, ever wanted to cover the paranormal in a normal way. We've always gravitated to writers like Offutt's a great one. And I think he's out there listening, too. I'm not positive. But Offutt,
he might be.
He was one of the people that I really liked. I'm really interested. If we're going to cover paranormal, we're not going to cover Roswell. And if we do, we want to cover it in some way that no one has done yet, or a different point of view or perspective. If we're going to cover, that's why when we did the show on Bigfoot with DNA, all right, well, if Bigfoot is real, then let's cover it from the perspective of how would science and DNA find it. If we're going to cover ghosts, we're going to cover it in some different way, or try to do it in some different way than what's already being said out there. We don't want to cover the same stuff that everybody else is covering over and over and over again, which is one of the reasons why we don't cover paranormal all the time, He says you can only say so much about it at any given point in time. We do the same thing. We try to do the same thing with science. Anything we try to cover, we want to give people a different perspective or a different viewpoint. Religion, things like that. We want to cover the odd, crazy, weird aspects. One of the things that when I first started talking to Lobo, we always come down to this crazy gray areas in between all of this stuff that we talk about as much as possible, like death rituals that we just talked about. These are things that people don't normally talk about. It's something that's not out on everybody's radar, but it's very fiercely interesting. So we're very much interested in the gray areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always go, wow, our show is going through an evolution right now. And then I'll go back and I'll listen to our old episodes, and we're really not. You know, ever since day one, we've always bounced all over the place and tried to be as random as possible, as long as it's interesting, as long as it's something that's fascinating and something different that isn't being already said. Even when we do our little ramblecasts and we cover off-the-wall news stories and we act like idiots, we try to cover stuff that isn't being talked about in a regular way. Like, we probably will not talk about the Malaysian airline thing because everybody's talking about it. There's no need for us to cover it right now because everything that can be said is being said or will be said. So we'll probably go out and find something completely different and off topic.
Cover some other mysterious missing plane.
Yeah, well, something
that would be a good topic. Weird other mysterious disappeared plane.
Yeah, we've kicked
planes.
That around. We've kicked that around. We were going to do an episode on the Bermuda Triangle with, like, it was the Bermuda Triangle and it was the Devil's Triangle, or not the Devil's Triangle, the Japanese one. There's two different places.
I think that is the
triangulation,
Devil's Triangle, but I'm not sure.
Is it the Devil's Triangle?
Yeah, there's a Great Lakes.
It may be, maybe.
Yeah, so there's we were going to do a show at one point of all of that. That was and it just got to a point where, like, there's too much speculation, there's too much information here that's hearsay and conjecture. So what will happen is it'll end up getting stripped down. Here this is like fourth wall stuff. What we'll do is when we get together to do a show, if we decide on something, like we'll just use the missing planes and just missing things for an instance. You know, we'll get together and we'll both shoot ideas back and forth, and then we'll come to a common place and we'll be like, all right, you know what? There's just not enough to grasp onto that's factual, but there's stuff here that's really interesting. So it'll end up getting weaved into another show as a, like, a sidebar or an article or just a, hey, here's a little bit of, you know, interesting information that'll end up getting, you know, weaved in like, and I don't want to say in passing, but that's almost what it feels like, because it's not, we could put a show together that sounds, you know, that has to do with that. But at the end of the day, I believe Ro sees it, we'd be cheapening our standards by doing it, just the way we see it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we can go out there. If we kind of pride ourselves on the due diligence of finding our information, and I don't want to say completely fact-checking, but we've both been caught with our hands on our asses a few times with misinformation. But in the same token, we've taken it in stride. We're like, yeah, we're wrong. And on the next show, we'll say, we're wrong.
Yeah.
And here's the actual information. But it's just the way the show has gone from day one.
When we decide we're going to cover something, like one of our shows that really got a lot of attention was our show on Freemasonry. And we told people up front, this is not a conspiratory show. We're not here to talk conspiracy. But we will tell you where Freemasonry came from, how it moved from this country to America, what happened with Freemasons during the Civil War. Because Freemasons, you know, just because we still had the North and South and there were still Freemasons on both sides of the border, so they were both, you know, firing at one another. We really wanted to give people that perspective. If somebody is going to go, like, eventually we're going to do a show on the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with somebody I used to work with, and he was talking. He's like, yeah, the Illuminati's controlling everything. I'm like, whoa, what is the Illuminati? Well, they're the people behind the scenes pulling the strings. And I'm like, what are they? Where did they come from? Where are they? I don't know, but, you know, everything becomes catchphrases after a while. And we said, well, let's talk about this in the way that let's at least try to educate people. So when we do these kinds of shows, we'll take everything we can find, throw it into a big pot, and then we'll boil it down and we'll trim the fat off and we'll get down to what is important, where the baselines and where this stuff comes from. And we caught a lot of crap behind the scenes for our Freemasonry show because we just weren't interested in conspiracy. There's too much of it out there, and if somebody's going to believe in that stuff, that's fine. You believe what you want to do, but start here and go from here. do what you want to do. If you're really into conspiracy, you're probably not going to like our show. But if you want to learn something, if you want to learn where everything starts from, if you want to learn the beginning of it, that's where you'll go. That's, you know, we're hoping that people will come here and walk away from it. But we've done that with a few shows. You know, Lobo did a show on, which I wish he'd do another one like that, but he did a show on Wendigos, you know, the legend behind Wendigos and things like that, because it was, it's a cool topic. And every once in a while, you know, there's a lot of shows where I'll say, you know what, I want to do a solo show on this topic. And then we'll start talking, and he'll have a bunch of input on it. And rather than it be like a solo show or one of his solo shows, we'll boil it down and we'll say, let's just both do this show together and let's see where we can take this. And then that's why we don't do shows like that very often, because we really do put a lot of work into it. We put a lot of thought in how we're going to lay it out. And then eventually we just throw it on the table and we just jump in and go for it and see what happens. But as long as somebody's getting something different and informational out of it, that's what really matters to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to laugh at us for being stupid or whatever, fine, we're great with that. We've been called, somebody called us infotainment, which I'm fine with. You know, we want people really, that's why we're podcasting. That's why we got into this, because it was like, let's try to be different than all this crap that's out there, because we know this side of the story and that side of the story, and none of this is getting told. So, you know, we're not going to have crazy psychics on the show. I'm not going to have nut job ufologists on the show. We've gone back and forth about, you know, we've had many of the conversations about having Stan Freeman on. And I'm like, well, what more can we talk to him about that he hasn't already talked about that he's going to be willing to talk about? You know, it's not that I don't like the guy. I'd love to have him on the show. But what can we do with this guy that hasn't been done or asked to him already? And Stan, as much as I love listening to the guy, once you get him on a roll, getting him off of a gear and into a different gear is kind of hard. So,
yeah,
you know,
at the end of the day, I mean, we all know people, Ro and I'm sure you do too, Tim, but we know people that are in the field of ufology that are doing their due diligence. They're correlating information. They're following up on information that's been put down. And then you have the people that are just stark raving mad. And you have people that believe in psychic phenomenon that are doing their due diligence, people that are putting science into it and trying to figure out if there's a common base for what's happening. And then you have the whack jobs. But you have actual people that have boots on the ground doing their due diligence in any given field, and unfortunately those people are drowned out
they don't
by the crazies. And it's a shame, because the people that are actually doing their due diligence they take it seriously, and they, whether or not I believe what they're doing is in my realm of I want something to look at, you have to respect them for their tenacity and what their passion is. You know, that's they believe what they're doing. They believe in what they're doing, and you kind of got to respect that. But in a token, these are the people that I'm talking about that don't try and force that stuff on you. They're like, this is what I believe. You don't have to, but this is what I look at. And I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, and that was shoved down my throat from a very young age. And when I came to my moment of enlightenment, it didn't hold that. I was done. It's the same thing. When something's shoved down your throat and they're trying to get you to believe what they're saying, it loses credibility.
Yeah, that's why we're not, like, myself personally, I'm walking away from the skeptical community more and more all the time. And I've never really been a part of the hardcore believer community. I very much try to stay in that gray area, because that's where the really fascinating stuff is.
Yeah.
You know, like as of late, I've tried to give it its respect. Within the last few months, I've really been hanging out in a lot of the chat rooms and the forums and a lot of skeptical websites. But more and more and more, I'm getting burned out on it, because I continuously see this arrogant attitude of, because I don't believe what you believe, I'm superior to you. And the other side of the coin is the ufology crazy ghost hunting world, where, you know, how's the term go? A believer doesn't need evidence, and a skeptic, there is no evidence.
It's,
you know, and
the way
right.
it is. Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, you have people that are hardcore skeptics, and they drift into the skeptic realm, where they any person completely shuts down to any possibility, they're jipping themselves. Because the minute you shut down, all wonder is removed. And a true scientist is always within that realm of wonder, because they want to prove something happened, or they want to figure out how something worked.
It's the same thing with an engineer or a mechanic or anybody that's, they want to know how something works. They want to tear it apart. You know, that's like when I hear people that are in the Bigfoot community, they're like, well, science would never want to find one of these things because it'd prove them wrong. No, it'd be a wonderful thing.
No.
It'd be a wonderful thing. And you talk to any legitimate scientist, they're going to be, that'd be great. I would love to find a species that doesn't exist or is little known. It's the same thing with someone that's in anthropology. If they found a new religious group that just was, you know, thousands of years old and they stumbled upon ancient relics of what they were doing, they would make them an anthropologist of note. Their names would go in history books for doing it. So those are the kind of people that I respect. The ones that still have that sense of wonder. The ones that
once you start
all wonder.
Once you lock into something, you start window painting and you start trying to come up with anything that's tossed at you, you try to take that to fit into your window of your belief system. And I think that's kind of a dangerous thing to do. I try to be fairly agnostic about everything that we talk about as much as I possibly can. But it's not, you know, except for what?
Sushi. I still hate that stuff.
Yeah. Anyways, but when you start,
well, let me throw one at you here from Tyler, because he actually sent me a question.
Uh-oh.
Try to rein it in a little bit here. He says, "Perhaps you'll be so kind as to ask them what drives them to do the show, why they spend their time, hard-earned money, and effort entertaining and educating us." So what? That's an interesting question.
Just that.
You know, behind it all, what's because you could have just wrapped it up and been like, this is too much. I got too much going on. You guys have family.
I do it for the money and the
business.
Now, what, we made $10 now or something like that? No, I have no problem answering that question. So people learn. So people walk away with something new and something different. Plus, I learn as I do the show.
Yep.
When we do the show, it forces me to go out and learn and do these things because I'm still learning. The reason I listen to Banal of America and all these other shows was so I could learn stuff. And I still listen to you guys and these other shows because I still want to learn stuff. And I'll get an idea, I should talk about this or I should talk about that. Or Lobo will say the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then we go out and we learn ourselves to try to cover something new and something different. It's not fun to go out. That's another reason we don't like to cover the same stuff everybody else does, because we already know it. We've already heard it. And I think that's probably one of our downfalls, is because I assume that since everybody knows about since I know all about Rendlesham, that everybody else probably knows about the Rendlesham UFO sighting, but they might not. But I just go, well, you know what? That's being talked about. Let's try to find something different now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons why I still do it. Plus, for me, it's an escape from everyday life. If I didn't have the show, I'd go nuts. Like, my favorite thing about the show is editing and making it sound good. Like, Lobo doesn't do any of the editing or nothing.
Nope.
I love doing that. That's, to me, it's alchemy. I take all of this stuff and I throw it together and I throw it out there and go, okay, people, interpret this. What's it sound like? And, you know, we'll stop. We'll take breaks. We'll record the show. And then when we start to feel that grind, or if we have family stuff going on, we'll stop. We'll take breaks all the time. But if I go for too long without doing the show, I start to go nuts. I'm like, I want to talk about this. I found this. I want to talk about that. And sometimes he'll call me up and tell me the same thing.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like, all right, let's do this then. Let's figure this out. You know, I can only go a few weeks before I start getting that weird twitch and ideas start building up in my head. So, you know, I want to teach people stuff and I want to learn more myself. It's part of the knowledge learning process.
How about you, Lobo?
How about
what drives you to do all that?
Same thing. It's the learning, it's the teaching, but it more than that, it's the dispelling of misinformation. You know, we've covered stuff on the show before that, you know, there's this common conception out there of, you know, X equals your variable. But in all actuality, there's a process in between there, and your variable's different. You know, you'll have, we just had the earthquake lights. We just covered a little bit on the earthquake lights. For years and years and years, there's been idea that when an earthquake happens, there's a piezoelectric effect of friction, and that may be causing the lights, and now they have video evidence of it happening. You know,
that was looked at as paranormal for the longest time.
It's the same thing with ball lightning. You know, for the longest time, it was like, no, that doesn't happen. It's, you're seeing things. It's the whole idea of, okay, there's, people are seeing something, you know, or people are learning something. there has to be a core basis for where it came from and what's causing it. You know, to this day, there's people that believe that, you know, we got involved in the Civil War purely for slave, for the belief in slaves. There was so much more behind that than just the emancipation of slavery. There was so much more involved in it. And if you go back and read about what built up to that point, I went to a technical school here in Connecticut, and we had the old textbooks. You know, when you're a state school, you get the leftovers. And, you know, read about the Hun. And, you know, I was sitting in the basement of a friend's house with my wife, and the movie The Hunley came on, and she had never heard word one about what the Hunley was. Now, I had learned about it, you know, 15 years prior to that. But, and again, I've run into people that still to this day believe that we won the Vietnam War. I'm like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, we learned about it in school. We won the Vietnam War. I'm like, well, I don't know what school you went to or what books you were reading, but that's not how it happened.
Yeah, who believes that? That's Jesus. How it,
yeah. Yeah, there's
people out there.
You got to
stop hanging around with
that,
these people, Lobo. Who are these people, who are these people that you know?
Yeah, well,
it's all right.
There's just, yeah. Apparently, well, it's Connecticut. It's
Well, to make you feel better, I said to somebody at work, we were talking about the Malaysian airline thing, and I was like, well, it could be like Amelia Earhart. She's like, who's that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, Jesus,
yeah,
I'm
there's some people.
Old, man.
Yeah, there's a whole generation of people that don't know who Amelia Earhart is or what Flight 19 was. Or, I mean, believe it or not, there's people that don't know what Roswell was, which shocks me. You know, even just
that's
the story of Roswell. Yeah, well, probably, but I mean, there's people that don't know what the Falk Monster was, or what the Hopkinsville Gremlin was, or a goblin, not gremlin. You know, there's just so much out there that people that have never heard of the Mothman, the story of the Mothman. I'm like, wow, you know, even or the Jersey Devil. I'm like, great, it's you know, these things may or may not exist. I don't think they do, but there's people that do. But the fact that these people have never heard of it. I'm like, where did you spend your time growing? Oh, in front of a video game. Oh, okay. You know, people don't go to the library. They don't take out books. They don't read. You know, there's people that are being brought up right now that have never touched a paper book. They're reading off of Kindles and their iPads and stuff. So I'm like, wow, go out to the library and pick up a book. You know, learn.
Well, that's the thing too. Like with me, paranormal wise, all of the paranormal books that I read are very old. Mm-hmm. They're, like, I read them off the tablet stuff because they're not in print anymore because they're so old. Like, most modern paranormal books I don't want to read now because it's just the same recycled junk, you know.
Watered down for so long.
So, you know, like, my house.
Coming out that's good, though. People that are actually doing their due diligence.
Yeah. I've got a wall full of paranormal books here, and my kids are allowed to read any of them. You know, I've had my daughters picked up a couple of them and done some reports off, like, Haunted White House and things like that. So, you know, I make it a point to try to read stuff as much as I possibly can. That's like, you know, the whole Lovecraft thing. It's kind of funny. We were talking about, you know, Lovecraft last week and how we've been going back or I've been going back and reading old books to see if they still hold the same significance to me. And I look at kids now and it's like you said, it's like they're on their iPhones and stuff like that. And we've got the internet, which is the most vast repository of knowledge we've ever had. It's our modern day Library of Alexandria. And all we use it for is cats and porn or, you know, update statuses and things like that. And I'm like, people go use it, you know, use what's out there because everything's out there. It just needs to be found, you know, and it blows my mind. Hopefully, as people get older and kids get older and they get more focused and stuff in life, they'll go out and find these kinds of things.
Probably.
You know, I sit all day long when I have time, you know, post stuff.
Now, I opened it up here. We got about 15 minutes left, so let's do lightning round. I opened it up to chat questions. So, Manuel Navarette wants to know, who would be your absolute dream guest to have on the show?
Oh, man.
Wow.
You don't have to – if you don't want to give it away, you can just be vague if you want.
Degrassi Tyson would be one of them. Jacques Vallée would be one of them. I'd love to talk to Jacques Vallée.
Kaku. I would love
Kaku would be
Kaku.
Great, yeah. Kaku's very open-minded.
Okay.
Dr. Sykes, I'd love to talk to Sykes. I'd like to have Todd Disitel on to talk to him.
Disitel would be fun.
Yeah.
Disitel would be really neat. He would be very cool.
All right.
People that are pioneers and are, you know, looking to do different things than what's already out there, or are saying different than what's already out there, you know.
Yeah. Okay, next one here. Is there any topic you want to cover but haven't for lack of credible information on it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Illuminati is a big one. We deal with that battle every week. There's been so many times where I've sat down and said, let's cover, like, the Illuminati. I've tried to cover that show 4 times, and every time I sit down and cover it, I call Lobo up and say, I can't do this. There's too much bullshit out here.
It is.
We will cover that topic.
Yeah. Aleister Crowley, the misconceptions of Crowley. I mean, how do you tackle that? The whole dark magic as opposed to what, you know, actuality.
At any given time, I've got 15 ideas on the back burner. At any time, I've got a notebook of stuff that I just write stuff down in.
All right. Here on Facebook, Jason Offit informs me that the correct answer to the last question was Jason Offit. So,
haven't we tried to have Offit on?
We did ask him once or twice, but he's busy.
Yeah, he's a busy man.
Yeah,
Offit
can be a bit of a diva.
Get back with us, so.
Wow, I didn't say that.
Yeah, I would like
to. No. Now that I know he's listening,
I would like
I had
to have
say
you
it.
On. I do want to have Offit on, but I want to talk to him. If it's in regards to paranormal,
don't give it away. I don't know.
Whatever.
Just text
questions.
Me. Just contact each other
through
Facebook.
Would like to talk about.
Right.
Okay. All right. We're crossing like 8 realms here to have this conversation
next.
With you guys in Offit. So it's not. Yeah, we're gonna bump into the Malaysian plane. let me see here. All right, Sater has an honest, awkward question. He wants to know what you guys think of Eerie X. I don't even know what that is, so you can no comment.
It's another radio show, and honestly, I haven't listened very much to it at all.
I listened
have no
to the first episode they had, and I just...
Yeah, not... Couldn't tell you. I've...
Sater, you have my Skype, you have my phone number, call me,
We'll talk.
Yeah, that's a conversation for the bar, Sater. Not
that's
not
funny. I love you, Sater. I know why you're doing it.
Brian Small wants to know if you're ever going to do a show on earthquakes.
Yeah, we got to get who we're going to have. We're going to talk to Rob. You get Rob Father on. Yeah, I know why he's asking that too. We did it. We lost that. Got lost in the cracks.
Eventually it'll happen, but again, we go back to the earthquake lights things, and if we're going to do a show on that, it's going to go back to, like, the earthquake lights and things like that, things about that are weird about earthquakes that don't normally get covered.
Right.
And finding someone who has that information to come out and talk about that is what we're interested in. Like, the whole concept of California going to fall into the ocean, is that really going to happen? What causes earthquake lights? Is there any merit behind them? Now they're beginning to find out that, yeah, they're real. So, yeah, eventually we'll do it, but it's finding the people with the pertinent information that know what they're talking about to come on and do it.
Yeah.
Next.
Go ahead.
No, next. Next question.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. Relax, Lobo. Relax. I'm running the lightning round here. These people chat so fast, I can barely keep up with them. Opinions on Cosmos. I presume they mean the TV show.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
What more do you need?
Yeah.
I haven't even watched it. I can't comment.
How do you,
it's worth it. Go out and pirate it if you have to. It's worth pirating.
No, I have. I could watch it. I'm not worried about that. I just don't have the time. That kind of thing. It says you guys should have an occultist on, or is that redundant? Have you had an occultist on?
It's in the works. I will say that we're definitely going to be talking to somebody in the field of Satanism soon.
Yep.
And we're going to be working. We're going to be doing the concept of occultism. It's the idea of how we're going to cover the concept of occultism. I don't want to cover it. I don't want to do a typical Aleister Crowley show on occultism. We're going to cover, again, different aspects of it that you normally wouldn't hear from different places. It's just a matter of lining the guests up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hear you. That's one of the. I'm in the same boat. Sometimes you have a good idea and you got to find the right guest or. You know,
that's a big part of
the problem.
You
get a good guest, and you're not sure how you're going to really run it out there. So I know exactly what you mean. Let me see. There was one more. Oh, Manuel wants to know if Fred Phelps is going to heaven or hell.
It's not up to us.
Exactly. It's not up to
us.
You guys
are so down to the middle of all
things. Well, you got to look at the fact that if someone believes what they're preaching is truth. Then no matter how much we hate what the person said or has said, it's not up to us.
there's no proof that there is a heaven or a hell either way. So, I mean, again, are they going to go to a place where there's butterflies and chocolate rainbows? I don't know. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, if it were up to me,
what
the,
do you
guy,
think, Ro?
The guy would go to neither. He'd be stuck in if it were up to me, the guy'd be stuck in purgatory forever. You know, if that was ever, if it were given to me and my option, you know. Well,
yeah,
sure. Like
again, at the end of the day, it's, you know, whether or not we hate what the person said or did, or what, whether our beliefs go against what they believe, it's not up to us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Manuel wants to know: will you ever have someone from the Church of Creationism on the show?
Nope.
No, no.
That's not going to happen.
No. I would be cool with talking to the guy, but again, like, it goes back to, do we want to have raving lunatics on the show? Like, yes, that
well,
is.
Yeah. I wouldn't blow up that quick, Adam.
No.
Oh,
you're
just a guest. Oh, all right.
See, you know, we
you
don't
just try and trip
them
up over
show.
And over again until it got uncomfortable.
But that's not our way. We're not going to have somebody on the show that – we're not looking to have somebody on the show that we're going to argue with. If it's somebody that we don't agree with or their views are too far out there, we're not even going to bother wasting the time to have them on the show. Like Melba Ketchum, we would never have her on the show just because of all the controversy and stuff around her, and it would turn to us flipping out on her.
And
which,
it would do a disservice to us and to them. We're not within the realm of disrespecting people.
Yeah, we don't want to have somebody on
there
just to disrespect their ideas and their viewpoints. And if Lobo went nuts, I'd let him go. I'd probably leave him on. So, you know, it's not we're not here to belittle people or tear them apart. When we have somebody on, we're genuinely interested in what they're going to talk about. I'm not interested in what the Church of Creationism has to say.
All right. Now, Barudi wants to know if you'll be having a live show anytime in the future, aside from this.
Ooh, that's
experiment.
Still. We're still trying
to be determined.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the problem is hosting one because it's expensive. I know you've offered your services to us behind the scenes, so it's possible. We might eventually do some kind of a live show. Exactly. Yeah, it was one of those nights probably. But I don't know how our show would work. I've got control issues. Like, I have to be able to go back and polish the product up that we record as much as
I possibly can.
And to do a live show and put it out there, it's not having a net's kind of uncomfortable for me. Like, I'm really, really rough on going on other people's shows and doing interviews on other shows. Very few people have had me on. I get asked a lot, but I'm like, well, I'm busy. I've got flesh-eating bacteria.
So,
for me to do a live
show. I got to rush you here because we got this Seder character. He called in here. He gets 1 minute because we got like four minutes left. Way to call at the very end of the show. So we'll give him a minute here. Seder, you're on the air, buddy. What's up?
What is shaking, sirs? You are all fine.
Hey,
sirs.
Seder.
What's going on, dude? I told you you have a minute. You might want to speak a little faster than that.
Yes, we're running out of time.
Okay, I'm going to make this really quick. Tim, thank you for having these guys on the show. It was amazing. Loba, Rojan, I love you guys. And that's all I really have to say. So thank you for this. It's been a great evening.
Love you too, brother.
Oh, wow. I didn't mean to rush you. No, you really... He went too fast there. Okay.
I can go slower.
Yeah.
I can go slower.
Yeah.
No.
Well, he was one of the people that helped get us out there. Seder.
Yeah, I think you said that earlier. Do you have your own show, Seder, you want to plug?
I do. Sure. Swing by the-bunker.net and be offended, because we do that.
It's awesome.
All right.
The bunker's awesome.
So what's the URL for that? Well, the Heisen Bunker?
The-bunker.net. Yeah.
Spell that.
T-H-E-hyphen, the little dash, B-U-N-K-E-R.net. Or find us on Facebook or, you know, all the things.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Seder. Your contribution to the program will definitely be fondly recalled.
Remember. I'm sorry.
Love you, Seder.
It's all right, pal. It's all right.
Love
it's
you guys.
Right.
Thank you.
Peace.
Have a good night. Thanks for tuning in, buddy. All right. There he goes.
That was nice.
I'm not sure what that was all about, but
it's
always nice to have someone.
Welcome to our
family. It's very late at night. I'm not sure what these. Oh, it is.
Seder was
the bunker dot. I thought there was something before between the and
it's
the bunker. That's why I was confused.
It is the hyphen. Bunker.net.
Oh, see, I thought it was like some kind of bunker, like the Tyson bunker or something. So I'm like, what are you saying, dude? Yeah.
No,
so
the name of the show is Transmissions from the Bunker, and the URL is the-bunker.net. It's
all right.
It's Seder Pastor Recoil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
Well,
you
we only got 90 seconds left, so let's say goodnight to the folks tuning in live. Thank you very much, everybody. Seder says he was tipsy. I think we figured that part out. But thank you, everybody, who tuned in tonight. Amazing turnout in the chat room. We'll definitely have to do this again with these guys because it definitely turned into something pretty wild in there. And I really do appreciate the awesome energy that you guys brought and picked me up a little bit here. As I said, I'm kind of under the weather here, but thankfully we had no incidents or accidents, which is always fun. I'll include the plugs at the end of the show after I say goodbye to the live audience. Of course, we got to plug projectarchivist.com. Pretty simple, projectarchivist.com. The guests tonight have been Rogan, Razorwire, and Lobo Matthias. They are the hosts of this outstanding program. As you heard, we covered a bunch of stuff that we never really do on BOA Audio, and I really do appreciate the stuff they're doing, even though sometimes they do stuff that I want to do. I appreciate that there's somebody else out there doing stuff to try and make me get better, and like you said, it goes both ways, trying to keep each other on our toes. So thank you guys for coming on the show, and once again, thanks to all the folks who tuned in live. There we go. All right. They're all gone now. Thanks, guys. I really do appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank
Hopefully
you,
I held up.
Cool.
We're still recording now, so don't say anything offensive, Lobo.
Oh, like what?
I think that pause was you trying to come up with something offensive. But anyway, thank you guys.
Go.
No one doubts your ability to come up with something offensive. Wow,
nice.
That chat room cleared out fast.
Yeah,
now we went from like 25
out.
People
yeah.
to two in one
wow.
minute. My
wow,
goodness.
You had 25. I didn't want to chat room. I didn't want to be distracted.
That's
yeah, it was a wild happening in there. It felt a little bit like a party,
cool.
which I do appreciate for a Saturday night show. Let me just throw my plugs here, and then I'll let you guys get going because, as I said, I've been hurting. Hopefully, didn't come off too noticeable tonight, but
not at all.
It's like the stomach ache from hell, and it's not from drinking or anything because I haven't had anything to drink in a while, so it's pretty frustrating. At least it's just like the stomach ache with all the good parts. Anyway, if you're listening to the show right now at Blog Talk Radio and you have no idea how you found us, we are Banal of America. You can find out more from us at banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America. That'll bring up the page. Like us if you would like to. Although I heard recently, I don't know if you guys heard this story, but apparently now Facebook is like tightening the flow of these pages unless you pay.
What? Really?
So yes. So like, let's say you have 1,000 likes.
Yeah.
They're only going to let your stuff get out to like 10% of your liked audience. They've slowly been doing this. They informed like GE and Nike and stuff that this is what's going to happen, and everyone's mad because everyone's spent the last 10 years saying like us on Facebook, and now it's like you got to pay Facebook to reach all the people that liked you. Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, but until that all happens, like us on Facebook. And you just listen to the show for free, as you heard from Rogan or Lobo. I'm not sure which one. These live shows do cost a bit of money here to get on the Blog Talk and to do the 2 hours. And, of course, the tape shows cost quite a bit as well because we talk to folks all over the world. So if you could help us out, that would be great. Stop on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you can mail us off something to our P.O. box, and you can find the address also at Banal of America. On the next edition of the program, it's probably going to be coming at you a week from today, so March 29th. I believe it's going to be a pre-recorded episode. Our guest is going to be Albert Rosales. He's done an amazing job of collating all of the various extraterrestrial alien entity sightings and cases that have been reported for decades, if not centuries. And he's put together an amazing website. We talked to him about his work doing that. So I'm about 90% sure that'll be coming at you on March 29th, Saturday, maybe Friday. I can't say for sure, but sometime around the end of next week. And then hopefully in about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, we'll also have the baseball special. I'm already getting ready to put the band back together. I'll be taping a bunch of shows or a bunch of segments for the show next week, and hopefully get as many folks back on this year's special as possible, and then just taping a whole bunch of stuff. It's been a crazy month for me, working a ton, kind of threw off the schedule of the show, and of course, now that I'm done working so much, I've got this hellacious stomach bug. So hopefully by Monday or Tuesday, I'll be back 100%, and we'll be ready to dive into this free time that I've managed to carve out over the next few weeks. And with all that said, thank you once again to Rogan and Lobo. And on that note, I bid you all farewell, my friends. Until next time, this is Tim and all, thanking you for listening.